Welcome back to the belated Esports Central podcast. We are a day late from very unfortunate circumstances, but it is us. We're back. Episode number 59, recorded for now the 13th of September 2019. A day late. I'm so sad. I'm not alone. I'm Carmel Chikde, the host, but I'll be joined by Mr. Prophecy. And of course, the man himself, the king of flaking, Glenn, is back. How are you doing, GK?
I mean, you know, look, it's been, was I an hour late for tonight's recording? Yes, I was. Did I miss the previous recording that was supposed to be, you know, on time? Yes, I did. Obviously, you screwed up recording everything, so that's your fault.
What?
But I'm here. I'm here with technical issues and all. So it's good to be back.
Prophecy, on a scale of 1 to 10, how disappointed are you that we have to deal with Glenn for a whole hour?
Somewhere around 13.
Wow.
Reasonable, I just want to explain. I feel like, Prof, you're supposed to be the neutral one in this group, and you're not. So I'm actually quite sad about that. Thank you very much.
To be honest, I thought 13 was like quite a fair amount. What I think you were being really good to you, Glenn.
No, it was not at all. I'm not happy about this rating system, and I hate it.
All right, as host, I'm going to take command here, and I'm going to tell the saddest story known to man and the reason why we hate Glenn so much. So on Tuesday, we recorded the show, right? All usual, going to plan. It was only me and Prof on that night. We were kind of stressed, you know, just two guys on the Esports Central podcast, but we managed to make it work for 2 hours. Me and Prophecy, 1 hour, 20 minutes, grinded a great show, right? All out great. We had a recording, we had a backup recording. Both of them fucked out. Thank you, TeamSpeak. Really appreciate it. Me and Prof being depressed on the WhatsApp group, like, yo, this shit happened, all of that. Glenn's response was, oh, yeah, I can cover the podcast on Thursday. That means, like, I can't.
Okay, I feel like I basically took a very negative situation, which was basically probably your fault because you fucked up something. I don't know what it was, but I'm pretty sure it's your fault. And I turned it into a very positive spin by saying, you know what? Yes, I'm here, ready to go. So I actually think that I really saved the whole week by
yes, definitely.
My positive outlook on life.
All right. But maybe it was just karma then. You know, we literally made fun of you for the first 5 minutes straight in the scrap recording that the world will never see.
Exactly. I can imagine you guys did. And that's why everything bombed out, because the world is on my side. Thank you.
Yes. Sapphire is going to make sure your flight's on time next time too. Parabing.
That's asking for some crazy juju that it's just not possible to have.
Yeah, it's like I literally get so much satisfaction every time I see a tweet at Sapphire from Glenn. It's just like day equals made, you know?
Look, but I will say this. So Red Eye's coming to South Africa. I think he's coming here on holiday. Hopefully he gets here on time without any delays. But between him, myself, and Sam, I feel like we have some pretty shitty luck.
He's already here. He's already in the bush on a safari. So he clearly got you on time.
Did he, though? What if it was 30 minutes late? You don't know.
Well, 30 minutes late in the context of an 8-hour flight is not too shabby.
You know, for me, it's an issue because all my flights are minimum 30 minutes late.
Yeah, but so that's because your flight's only taken like an hour and a half. So 30 minutes
delayed,
is like...
I got delayed for an hour when I went to Boston. Okay, and Boston's like an 11-hour flight. So, from Doha to 11 hours.
Well, I'm going to say is like, don't antagonize GMAX then.
Fine, actually. I have no comeback for that. I'll let it go. I'll concede defeat just for tonight.
All right. So... what we do on this podcast, we talk about all things international esports. And by say all things, I mean like only the games that people care about, you know, like Fortnite and yeah, that's about it. You know, that's our favorite game. And of course, we talk about local esports as well. All things that happen here, local tournaments, local players, local pros, just the good things, sometimes the bad things, all the things. First story of tonight, are we done show talking? You guys want to talk about actual news now?
Yes, let's maybe.
That was enthusiastic. I'm surprised. No NBA talk, nothing. Okay, first thing.
But actually, since you brought up NBA, let me just put out there, right? Okay, I reviewed NBA 2K20. The game is great. Okay, it's a great game. Yeah, do they have a slot, like a literal slot machine in the game? Yes, they do. Okay, yes, they do. Is it in South Africa? No, it's not, because our laws are great enough that they block that shit, so you're not allowed to do it. But okay, the point is, everyone's hating on NBA 2K. It got bomb reviewed by everybody because of slot machines. If your country doesn't do the gambling thing, just enjoy the fucking... it's okay to enjoy a game, okay, without being caught up in the hype and the circle jerk of Reddit. So that's my NBA, you know, but two cents.
then I think you're quite biased to say you like NBA, because of course you'd like NBA. It has the best sneaker collection in the world, right?
Guy, people that love NBA as a sport were shitting on this game. And then some dude from Belgium, okay? And the irony is that in Belgium, they literally also do the same laws that we have where they block gambling. The dude from Belgium was like, oh, this guy from Cradle of Your Head got paid mad money, gambling money from 2K. If I had gambling money, firstly, from 2K, I wouldn't be here, okay? I'd be sitting on a yacht in, like, the south of France or, like, maybe the coast of Spain. I don't know. I'd be living my best life. I wouldn't be here with Carmel fucking arguing about esports and why Dota 2 is a shit game, okay? I would have probably hired a billboard in, like, the biggest countries all over, like, biggest cities all over the world, and, like, put a billboard that said Carmel is trash. I mean, that's what I would do.
All that would do would be to make Carmel, like, a more important international figure.
And yeah. I'm okay with that. Because
Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, because secretly, I actually support him and want him to do well in life. But I will never say that out loud. Like, you know. So, anyways.
All right, so back to international esports news. The first topic we have tonight, we'll give to our boy Glenn. It's the worst esport of the evening. Let's talk about League of Legends World, sir.
Let's talk about the most prestigious online tournament, like esports tournament in the world. I know that we had a poll. Obviously, you all voted wrong because you guys made a TI9, which is silly. no, jokes. Listen. So League of Legends World Championship is coming up. And for those people that aren't in the privy or aren't aware of it, it's the equivalent of basically Dota's TI. So obviously, all of the regions are sort of locked in their top three spots. For most nations, the top three spots that get a berth into World. One and two, seeds one and two actually just go straight into the tournament, into the group stages. And then third seed for most of the regions, as well as also the wildcard regions, they have to do play-ins, where they'll do sort of a group stage prior to the actual main event group stage. So looking at LCS, I think we've spoken about it before already, but so Team Liquid and Cloud9 are in there. Team Liquid actually beat Cloud9 3-2, very, very close, top best five. So Team Liquid, Doublet, who's my boy, he is there. The surprise there, well, not really a surprise, but what was actually quite an exciting game, a series, was Clutch Gaming versus TSM. And obviously TSM notorious being one of the most successful League of Legends organizations ever. They have been on a slump ever since they kicked Doublelift. So they lost out to Clutch Gaming. So it's the second year in a row that they are not making an appearance at Worlds. Then you looked at sort of Europe. Fnatic played a best of five against G2, and they lost to G2. Again, also a 3-2 series, also a five-game series. And so those are the two that are going there. And in terms of third place, Skulk is actually his third place. So Skulk is going to be the third Schalke. Team to represent. Sorry, Schalke. See, I went Skulk. I went Skulk before.
Football fan calls them Skulk.
I mean, it's a football club, so surely. Yeah,
that's why.
You should know Schalke 04 are a big team, Glenn.
No, they're not. Were they in the Champions League with Liverpool? No, they weren't. Also, Arsenal, were they there? No, Arsenal weren't anywhere. Arsenal aren't doing anything. So anyway, you guys keep playing against Crystal Palace and then battling to score goals against them. LCK. So Korea was actually really rad because SKT went through an absolutely amazing comeback arc. I mean, it's basically anime. We're talking anime levels of comeback, right? So SKT barely made it into playoff seasons, right? I mean, they literally got the wild card slot into playoffs. And then the first team within the Korea was in the setup. In the history of obviously the setup has been the last few years, where a wildcard team made it all the way to the end to win the LCK split. I mean, SKT basically just like mental boomed everybody. I mean, 2-1 Africa Freaks, which was like the closest series that there was. They 3-0 Sandbox, 3-0 Damwon, and then they went on to 3-1 Griffin. So it was actually just ridiculous at how dominant they were. So Faker's coming back with a sort of arc. LPL, IG, who are the current world championships, but have went through a massive slump after losing to TL during MSI. They somehow scraped through with a win there. The actual overall winner of the LPL, which is China, was FunPlus. FunPlus Phoenix, really exciting team. Really excited to see what they do with sort of the rest of the regions. And then Royal Never Give Up. Obviously, RNG, a staple in the scene. So, look, I'll see, the lower world championships is looking up to be probably the most competitive world in the history of the scene. I mean, you know, you look at sort of North America, which has always been a joke for a long time. But, you know, TL beat IG, which are the world championships. GT, you know, beating SKT. So it's really shaping up to probably be one of the most free-for-all worlds ever. I am hoping that TL can just get out of groups, because that has been Doublelift's curse since forever. So, yeah, well, Worlds is going to be exciting. And I really do recommend that, you know, people that don't normally watch LoL, I really do recommend that you actually just pay attention to this Worlds, because it could actually genuinely be one of the most exciting ones in the history of the scene, which is obviously always good.
Boy Faker's going to take it, man. I'm ready.
I mean, look, he's not... SKT hasn't been the most dominant this season. If anything, they've actually probably been the shakiest. And the other issue as well is, like, also people actually are starting to doubt whether Korea actually understands the meta very well. And obviously that comes from the performance they had at MSI. But yeah, everything's up for grabs. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. We can all make predictions and, you know, look at our analysis. But yeah, who knows? Who knows?
Faker all the way. I'm willing to bet, Glenn, SK Telecom's taking it, my man.
Do you really want to bet money on that?
Not money. Something better. Something better.
What is dinner?
Okay, yeah. I'll take it.
He's not going to pitch to that, though.
Oh, yeah, that's too good. He'll deflake it, as usual.
Oh, snap. That's harsh, but also fair. Fair, I deserve that insult, I must say. You know, Carmel, we did a bet last time, actually. We did a bet last time. So let's do it again. Think about what you want. Before the end of the episode, you tell me what you want to bet. But I definitely don't think SKT is going to take it all. So whatever you want to bet, I'm there for it.
Prof, you in on this action?
No, you guys can fight it out amongst
Prof
yourselves.
Prof will be the mediator. Prof's the mediator. Right. He's witness.
Okay, so I'm going to think of good stakes at some point during this podcast, and then we're going to do it. The bet's already won.
I love it.
But stakes are on the way.
Very much. Love it.
Prof, anything you want to add? Your thoughts about Worlds going on at the moment?
I mean, like I said, it on the broadcast a bit lost. But, I mean, I think everybody should at least, you know, have a cursory glance at Worlds. It is probably the biggest event in esports. Certainly, it's run extraordinarily well by Riot, and you know, you can always learn something from watching, you know, a rival program, rival game, or whatever, and you can learn a couple of new things. So, certainly, yeah, I would encourage everybody to at least watch. You know, if you can't watch anything else, at least try and watch the finals.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think that actually perfectly segues into our next topic, with other esports that we'll actually represent, even though Nadia is not here, is Overwatch League, who's heading into the playoff finals now. And I'll say the same thing about Overwatch as League of Legends. Like, these two games, although we make a lot of jokes and memes and stuff here in this podcast, like, in terms of broadcasting, the level of professionalism and stuff in the scene there, like, the show that these companies, the Riots, the Blizzards put on, it's phenomenal to see. I'm the biggest Dota fanboy in the world, but I will say, I think Worlds is produced better than TI in terms of production and things like that. It's just such a gorgeous,
you know,
so gorgeously
done. Like, which is going to break the world. But I'm actually going to disagree with you and actually agree with the Dota side for once in my life, which is actually surprising. But no, look, like I said, obviously, you know, we all have our games that we like to watch. CSGO obviously is by far the easiest one to watch. I mean, I would always pay attention every now and then there. But I mean, with TI, I mean, I obviously got involved. I watched a few of the games there, a few of the matches. And I mean, like, I at this point, like, back in the day, like maybe a year ago and then before that as well, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, LoL, Riot definitely put on the production level that no one had really been doing before, right? They definitely sort of set the bar quite early on. But looking at TI, I mean, the stats that they put up, the production value, the infographics that they would put up on the fly, I honestly think at this point in time, I don't think there is one esports are doing better than the other in terms of production value. I genuinely think, and you look at the costs and the level of quality of the talent as well. I mean, like, even in Dota, I mean, I haven't played the game in so long, like, a lot of the things kind of were a bit oblivious to me now when I watch. But talent really just made everything hype. And they really sold the story. I mean, you look at the story with OG. I mean, they really sold the story with OG and Team Liquid. And someone that came in as a very, very much of a casual, I was very much invested in the series. So I really want to say, I think that esports in general is really up the game, and everyone's really on that level. I mean, everyone obviously has different styles of how they want to do their production and their talent and all of those things. But yeah, no, TI was up there. I mean, it was a beautiful event to watch. Like, genuinely, was really just well done. And I think esports is up there in terms of production value these days.
All right. Some PC stuff coming out of this podcast. What the fuck is going on here, gentlemen?
I know, it's actually horrific. Too bad.
What podcast is this even? But, Prophecy, you want to give us some insight into the up-and-coming Overwatch League playoffs for the moment.
Yeah, so I mean, like the Overwatch League playoffs, this is the second to last weekend. So the last weekend actually takes place at the end of the month. I think it's the 29th, so it'll be the same weekend as Rage. So, you know, you can go to Rage and then probably catch the finals in the earlier hours of the morning. It is the only real problem with the Overwatch League is that the schedule is kind of messed. The first games start at about 1 a.m. The second game starts at 4 a.m. So, I mean, if you are going to be watching, like, you really do have to sort of pull an all-nighter. Okay, so the games will have actually started by the time this podcast comes out. It will have happened. It starts at 1 a.m. on South African time Friday morning. So you would have missed both of the games, Atlanta Reign and Hwangsoe Spark and Los Angeles Gladiators and San Francisco Shock following that. You might be able to catch the Saturday games, though. Again, also starting at 1 a.m., New York Excelsior and Vancouver Titans. But the next game, it's kind of nice. So that's I guess it would be the lower bracket final or perhaps the upper bracket final. I'm not 100% certain. There's no real indication here on the schedule. But so that game will take place at 9 p.m. Saturday night. Again, another one that will probably be, I'd guess, the lower bracket final then on Sunday night, 9 p.m., and then the final is on the 29th of September. And that is, let me just wait for this thing to load. That'll start, 3 p.m. Eastern Digital. I have no idea what time that is.
Okay, my thing is saying 9 p.m. again, so it should start then.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so 9 p.m.
That's a decent time to watch.
So, I mean, they're going to be catching most. It's about 7 o'clock British time. So, yeah, I mean, they'll get most of Europe at that point. But it is kind of a pity that, like, the other games before that start so late. For most of Europe. I mean, you'd be lucky to get it at, 11, 10 at night if you were really on the extreme western end of Europe. So it's a bit of a rough one.
Yeah, it always blows my mind. It's like, obviously, post-match threads. I mean, I would love to watch LCS as much as I could. But, I mean, either it's always, in the middle of work or busy. But you'll get guys that literally will wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning or stay up until 2 in the morning to watch, their favorite team play. These games can go on for maybe an hour, 2 hours. Probably around 3 hours, really, if you're doing a best of five. And I mean, honestly, I'm specifically talking about League of Legends. And they literally will commit to watching, at that sort of time. And it's kind of wild because it's just a lot of dedication that I definitely can't do. I mean, I don't think I'd be willing to, stay up or get up to watch a 3 a.m. game and then be up for 3 hours watching that. So
even if it was the weekend,
fans are wild. I mean, no, probably not. Actually, wouldn't do it either. I mean, there's things to do. Look, honestly, I really wanted to watch it, but then I had a work event to go to, so yeah, I didn't get to finish watching all of TI, which kind of sucked because it was really exciting. And like I told you, the cast has really got me sucked in.
Yeah, I mean, but also TI at least had the bonus of being in China at the time. So as crap as that was for us, I mean, I think they posted their highest ever viewership figures again. Viewership figures are really shaky in esports. It all depends on which viewership figure they're using, but apparently it was the most watched TI broadcast.
Yeah, and I mean, we've spoken about it before. I mean, like, obviously China numbers are always a little suspect, right? I mean,
no, but we just talked Western numbers alone.
Yeah, Western numbers alone was the highest.
Yeah, but what I was saying is, like, despite the controversy that always comes around sort of numbers out of China, I mean, it is the biggest gaming region in the world. I mean, obviously, because also it's the country with the most people. So yeah, I can absolutely believe that if you're going to host something in China, it's going to be probably the most watched. So I can definitely believe that.
Yeah, I do think the TI numbers were pretty legit because having watched all the broadcasts live, I think the numbers were a lot higher than I can remember. 300,000 on the English stream, that's crazy for Dota, concurrent viewers. I mean, so I think the. It seemed pretty legit, the Twitch numbers that I saw. But, again, I do completely agree with what Prof says. You got to take all esports, quote-unquote, viewership numbers is, worth a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I wish I could get, the real numbers for China because I think China would have actually been, beyond massive this year.
But that's what I'm saying. It all depends on,
who made, how deep the Chinese teams make it because, I mean, whatever we say, the Chinese people are pretty nationalistic and... They are very, very patriotic to their own teams. So, it would be, I think, a little bit unreasonable to expect the viewers to have been completely crazy if a Chinese team wasn't in the finals.
Yeah. That's but fair. I mean, like I said, having said it again, I'm not saying that numbers were suspect or to even question it. I'm just saying, like, I'm not surprised. I would absolutely believe it is very believable that the numbers were the highest ever because it was based in China. I mean, I would like to see what the numbers were of League of Legends World Championships when they had it in China, like last year, the year before. I think it was last year. Yeah? I think that the China, the what's it, Bird's Nest, that giant stadium there.
It wasn't last year. It was 2017 in China.
So I mean, yeah, China is a massive region. So absolutely not surprised there.
All right. So unfortunately, we don't have our Overwatch prophecy of sorts. Yeah. So we won't go too in-depth on the Overwatch League analysis. Just stop it there. But where we will go, like, super ham into is the fucking CSGO Major, baby. Prof, how did that shit go?
Yeah, that was amazing, actually. It was a pretty crazy story because Liquid had come in with a huge amount of hype. They hadn't looked so great in the group stages, sort of struggling through, actually getting through as one of the last teams to make it with a 3-2 record. So they ended up getting drawn against Astralis. And, you know, everybody had been super hyped about this. Astralis had obviously, you know, largely disappeared from the scene for the last 3 or 4 months, not really played a whole lot of tournaments. And Liquid had become ascendant in all but name. As they had, I think they'd won someone, was it like 4 of the last 5 tournaments? Like they'd come in with like a 20.
Yeah, 3 out of stat. It was something ridiculous. I mean, it was something stupid, like 20 of the last sort of best ofs that actually kind of won. 20 out of like some 20 something. I mean, yeah, Thorin had a stat out there, which was a wild stat.
It was like bonkers stuff. Like the stats that Liquid had come in. But like, again, they weren't looking super great. So there was always, you know, like, is this actually going to work? We don't really know. But at the end of the day, game gets played, and every single team almost that was expected to make it through the quarters ended up losing in the quarterfinals. So just to start off with things, we had Ents, number 3 team in the world, losing to the Australians of Renegades. They got knocked out at that point.
Which was a huge surprise, right? I mean, like, Renegades has obviously been there, but they've always kind of hovered in the tier 2, tier 1 space, right? So for them to have actually beaten Ents, who obviously a lot of people kind of, you know, rate quite highly, was a huge, well, was one of the big upsets already.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, like, Renegades had done pretty decently at the last major, but they'd sort of fallen off. They'd had a number of visa issues, which just didn't really work out in their favor, unfortunately, and it ended up costing them a lot of synergy, so they hadn't done well recently. And coming into this, I mean, they were at one stage, there was 0-2, so if they'd lost another game in the groups, they probably would have been out. But ended up pulling it through with a 3-2 win. They thumped Ents in the quarterfinals, it must be said. And then they actually faced the you know, the very, very surprise package of Avangar, who'd actually knocked out Vitality.
I love that. That was a great story. That was such a great story for that kind of org.
Yeah. So, they knocked out Vitality there, Zywu not having the same superlative performances as expected, and quite a surprise for everybody involved, because I mean, Vitality had come in as the second best team in the world, so now the second and third best teams on that in the world on that side of the bracket have been knocked out. We go down to the lower bracket, and it's like, okay, Na'Vi again hadn't looked great. They'd be going up against NRG had looked like absolute fire coming into this section of the tournament, and Na'Vi got completely wrecked, like blown out of the water. They didn't look like they even really came to the party against NRG. And then it all fell to Astralis versus Liquid. Now, to say that this was an unexpected statement, an unexpected game, is a bit of an understatement, because Liquid lost 2-0 on their own home map of Overpass in the second one. And to be fair, it didn't really look like they had much of an idea of how to actually combat Astralis. Liquid choke memes came out. They looked like they were trying to play for themselves instead of as a team, which we'd seen so much of in the previous 4 months. And clearly, it seems as though the play break has cost them pretty big. But Astralis makes it through. They then beat NRG again. Fantastic game from Astralis. But they knock out NRG, and they meet Avangar, who'd somehow been able to beat Renegades on the other side. And unfortunately, you know, you want it to be like a Cinderella story. It's not really how this one goes. Astralis put up the most dominant final victory of all time. They got their third major back to back to back now. Fourth major for 4 of the players. It's the most in history. Organization has 4 majors as well. That's also the most in history. just setting all kinds of records. And I mean, you do got a feel for Evangel. They played extremely well getting to the final, but Astralis just seems to reach an entirely different level in the playoffs of a major. And they're now currently on an 18-0 streak in the playoffs of a major. They've won the last three events without dropping a single map in the knockout stage.
But I mean, you mentioned that point about that Cinderella story. But I mean, for those of people that are not like, you know, fully invested into the CSGO scene internationally, one of the big stories, obviously, I mean, we've obviously spoken about it in this podcast, was the idea that Astralis, like, everyone was really hating the team, right? Because they had the era, right? I mean, and Thorin's the guy who kind of coined that term of the era. So you had the Luminosity / SK Gaming with Fallen and the rest of the Brazilian team, right? You had that era. You have the NIP era. You had the Fnatic. Sorry, just burped there. That's awkward. You had the Fnatic era. But then also Astralis was this year. They had the era. And so everyone expected them to carry on going. But the whole argument around it, you know, and so CSGO had a massive self-introspective moment where they're kind of going, Astralis was supposed to carry on this era. But they kind of got caught up into the contracts around Blast Pro Series, right? And everyone got really upset because everyone felt like they're kind of selling out, you know, looking at money versus, you know, protecting their era. And that's what kind of Team Liquid came in and sort of took that spot. But what was so interesting for me and when I was reading about all of this is Liquid still haven't done it. They haven't won a major, right? As far as I know. Like, they've run a lot of the tournaments and they had a massive streak.
I mean, they came in as the world number one. They were... Yeah. I mean, they have their own era right now. The number of victories they have, like, their percentage win rates on every map, they basically are the number one team in the world. And even Astralis, after winning the major, said, like, we are not the number one team in the world. Like, we aren't that team yet.
But what's so surprising to me is, like, this Team Liquid has done so, and I actually just did my research. I just looked at it now. Up until July of this year, they broke Astralis' record, reaching 18 wins in a row, right? So, they would have carried on for a bit. So we're definitely in that sort of 20-plus region. But the fact is they still haven't won a major. And everyone knows in CSGO, those are the crown jewels, right? It's the way that you look at sort of tennis where, you know, you get the Wimbledon, the Opens. Like, those are massive. So the fact that Team Liquid hasn't really hit that hump, over that hump yet is surprising. But so Thorin actually made a whole tweet about it where he said, you know, when he interviewed Device, well, I think he or someone else interviewed Device, and they asked Device, you know, how would you deal with a slump? As Astralis, and he was kind of like, look, we just need to win a major, and you know, we would do that, we'll feel like we're back again, and they did. So I'm really interested to see sort of how the landscape sort of changes now in the next coming months, given that Astralis has come back. They've made a big statement by winning a major, cleaning out, you know, team, as you said, 2-0 to Team Liquid, who's, you know, the best team in the world, CSGO. So it's, yeah, CSGO is in a great space in terms of just competition and sort of what's at stake.
Yeah, it really was fantastic. So obviously, you know, Astralis go home with all the plaudits, but it does leave us, you know, waiting for that next event where the two will meet. And we're lucky in that that's going to be ESL One New York. That'll be happening in October. So we get to see them hopefully go up against one another. And if we can, well, that'll be absolutely fantastic. So yeah, that's what everybody's waiting for right now. But, the other story coming out of the major was just like the sheer number of roster changes going on. We've got something like 30 players currently sitting either on the bench or have actually been removed from teams sitting out in the wilderness. So it's going to get crazy. We've got retirement in the form of the legendary in-game leader of Na'Vi Zeus. He's retiring after this weekend's tournament in Moscow. And just all around... I mean, I think 5 of the top 10 teams are changing at least one player. A couple of them are doing multiple changes. So, yeah, it's going to get pretty damn wild from here on out. And, let's just hope that we get some very, very good CS for the rest of the year.
Man, I was so shocked seeing this because, like, after TI, I thought, you know what, Dota, the Reddit pin posters up there. I was like, okay, rosters are going to be nuts. I can't wait to see who's going to be chopping and changing, because I think like everybody other than OG was disappointed with TI. So I was like so hyped for it. But in the Dota scene, it's so quiet, right? Nobody said anything, no big movements just yet. But in CS, it was like day after teams were getting knocked out. Prof Oaks are fucking tweeting, we're looking for new teams. This guy's kicked. This guy's going here. It's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially the NBK kick was like wild because they got kicked, knocked out on the Friday. And before the game started on the Saturday evening, like, it had been announced that he'd been benched. And it's like an hour before, or was like an hour after that, they announced that, who was it now? It was Shox
Shocks.
Yeah, Shocks had also been like they'd been planning to remove Shocks, which was just like, I mean, you guys got knocked out 2 days ago. Like, what's going on?
But here, that story is also wild, right? Because I mean, again, like, you know, looking at sort of, I think it was Thorin as well, kind of brought up that history. Or actually, I think it was actually someone that was tweeting to Thorin, who kind of retweeted and just kind of laughed about it. Is that there's actually history between NBK and Shocks, right? So NBK actually replaced Shocks. No, sorry. Was it that Shocks replaced on the previous team?
So like you have to understand how the French work. So like the French CS:GO teams are notorious for like heavy politicking in all sorts of games. So like they constantly like remove players, and two players that absolutely refuse to play with one another are Shocks and NBK. They have tried it in the last say 3 or 4 years, but every time it's been not quite a disaster, but like they clearly don't like one another, and they'll never play on another team again, it seems. So the fact that they've basically both been removed from their respective teams means that they could be going to each other's team. I know certainly that there are rumors of Shocks going to Vitality, which is a prospect that everybody likes, even though Shocks is not the same player that he used to be. Hopefully he can get back to that level, but him being on Vitality is certainly an option. NBK at this point, it seems like it wasn't a very happy parting, if you can say that. It never would be a happy parting to get kicked from a team, but like it seems like there's a lot of ill will, especially given how NBK reacted afterwards on both Twitter and on Reddit. So yeah, hopefully they both get it sorted out, because what it has meant is that Vitality won't be able to attend Blast Moscow this weekend because they removed NBK. They don't have a player to replace him, and the two players that they were apparently trying to get hold of are not able to get they're not able to get visas in time. So
yeah,
they basically had to pull out of the event this morning, which is a bit of a screw up, and it's like a well done, bro. You kind of screwed yourself there.
But like, you know, on that story, so actually, yeah, so I just found the tweet now. So basically, the story is kind of NBK tried to kick Shocks from G2, and obviously, you know, when they were together, then Shocks got Kenny on his side, and then convinced Ocelot to bench NBK. So NBK kind of sits out, he gets put on Vitality, the team not doing that well, then sort of kick happy, started really well, and Vitality, obviously, as we said, I mean, they were arguably the second best team in the world in terms of CSGO, and it just ironically, then NBK gets benched again for Shocks. And Thorin kind of made this, you know, this joke kind of referencing one of the articles you read before, saying, you know, we're all living in Shocks' world. So yeah, the French scene is always a wild scene
I mean, like I said, the politics in that scene are wild. Like guys, they're like, you're constantly here, like, oh, this player will never ever play with that guy, and then like a week later, they, you know, they're on a team together, and like they're famous for like having like huge shuffles where like one team will take like two of the other two, like the other team's best players type thing. So it is quite a wild situation down there, but they somehow made it work. I mean, they've got two majors, have the French, and they'll certainly be, you know, a scary team to look forward to, because whatever we say, both teams might have, you know, failed to impress at the major, but there's still a ton of talent in that scene, and a ton of talent on both those teams. So yeah, it's something to be scared of.
All right. That's CSGO roster changes. I think locally, though, we've had some big changes as well. I say locally, but it's internationally, but it's kind of locally, you know, the ATK squad, Mr. Prophecy.
Yeah. That was, thanks for reminding me, actually. So ATK, obviously, the ex-Bravado team, the guys that, you know, we all saw do so well last year at DreamHack Winter. Not quite the same team by a long shot. They've actually announced themselves that they will be removing three of their own players. With the roster changes all announced as well. So we basically have Black Poison, Detrini, those are the two players from the old Energy team who joined ATK in, I think it was February of this year. So they've been removed, as is Fady. So all three of those have been removed from the team. And in comes MOTM, I think it's OC, who's the other one? Floppy from Singularity. And then the final remaining player is the return of Sonic. So he was in Envy, was removed from Envy, and he's now back to play with the rest of his team. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go on with this team. But certainly, I think, especially given that Black Poison and Domster didn't perform to the capabilities that they perhaps held, you know, like to the levels that they themselves old. I think we can safely say that the team that they have now should be an upgrade in skill if they can get things together. But I mean, that's a massive if. You know, it's one thing to say you've upgraded in skill. Team play is very, very different. You've only played with South Africans. Now all of a sudden, you've got I think it's two Americans, a Canadian, and two South Africans. So it's quite a change.
Yeah, but you know what I love about that. Like, for one thing, obviously, like, so Dom's actually himself, when you sort of tweeted the announcement as well. I mean, he even said himself, he's like, I didn't perform to my own level. And you know, had nothing but good things to say about, you know, Attack Arena, which is, you know, rad. But more than that, for me, is just, and I think it just shows the level of intent that ATK has in terms of the scene, in terms of like CS:GO, is that we've spoken about it before. Like, a lot of SA teams are not willing to sort of kick people that underperform, right? They kind of sort of feel like, and it's a kind of the meme that happens in League of Legends with CLG, where it's kind of like the power of friendship sort of laugh. Yeah. So for me, the intent that ATK is showing by going, cool, we've given these people a chance, and they gave them a significant amount of time, right, to really perform. And I'm sure they'll, you know, I'm sure Domster and Blackburn, they'll come back, right? They'll come back strong and they're sort of, you know, looking to themselves to figure that out. But for me, what I love is that ATK is going, cool, we gave you guys a significant amount of time. It didn't work out. Let's pivot. Let's do something new.
Yeah.
And I like that, because I think a lot of, and I know, we, you know, we call them an SA org because they are, but obviously, you know, with this team, it's international. But I just love the level of intent they're showing there by just kind of, you know, being tough and going, we gave a chance. It didn't work. Let's do something new. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like staking the claim, they did not just want to be ATK of South Africa, they were like, they want to put themselves on the map internationally, which is pretty cool to see. The implications,
no, absolutely.
I obviously, it's not a great thing, like with Fady, Black Poison, Dumpster getting kicked, it's not fun, of course, but I think the local CSGO scene is going to have, an influx of talent. Three of our top players coming back should shake things up locally as well, because I feel like, although the local CSGO space has been quite competitive and real good right now, but it's always good to see like these people who've went overseas, done it at the highest level before, or semi tier 2 level, coming back and bring their knowledge back into the scene. I think that's going to bolster the local community quite a lot as well.
Yeah, it definitely will do, especially because like they won't be able to play at
Comic-Con,
Rage or Comic-Con. I don't think it depends on like what the roster rules are, but I can't see them playing at either one of those two events, but yeah. The fact that they're coming back, you know, for the rest of the year is still something to savor, because those were some of South Africa's best players. And
that's what I love about it. And I think that, for me, that's such a rad thing. For me, firstly, the fact that we're still on international news and we still get to talk about a South African team, to me, is already rad, right? I mean, because that would never have happened, you know, 2 years ago, before, obviously, provided that they're their whole project to move there. But I think more than that, it's just like, these are players that have actually played in the US, have actually looked and seen and sort of the culture and the routines and the practices. That's knowledge they're going to bring back here, you know? And as you said, you know, the teams here, like CSGO is really competitive at the moment. Obviously, you know, GG doing really well at the moment. But to have those kind of players sort of come back and sort of bring all that expertise, that knowledge, that culture, that understanding of the infrastructure, and just kind of bring it back here, I'm really excited to see what's going to happen. And I'm obviously maybe, probably not going to be seeing those guys coming in terms of the big tournaments now with, you know, Comic-Con and Rage. But it paves the way for next year to be a really exciting time for CSGO locally, which is rad.
Yeah, definitely something to look forward to.
All right, so the last thing I want to touch on about CSGO and the major is it's quite a rough topic, actually. It's on the topic of safety at esports events, right? I think, I don't know if anybody's seen the Twitch clips of the kid climbing on the railing, like behind the panel while Thorin's there and shit. And then that was one clip, obviously, so that's an exposed panel. And then the other instance was four fans jumping through, like, massive, like, not massive.
Well, climbing onto the stage at the major, yeah.
Exactly. Climbing onto the stage, four of them. And obviously in the video, it's only like 50 seconds long, but in 50 seconds, no security response, right? So this has brought up the topic of safety at esports events, for me at least. Because I remember Red Eye tweeting about this not too long ago, maybe last year sometime, and I was reading this and I was like, man, that's so paranoid. Why are you worried about safety at like gaming events and shit? But like, if you think about it, with the kind of stuff we're seeing these days, right, in terms of like, I don't want to be too extreme and say like bring up mass shootings and shit, but like legitimately, that's what you see a lot these days, especially in America. So when you
it's not extreme at all though. It really isn't extreme.
Yeah, it really isn't.
There was an incident where someone actually did threaten to shoot up one of the CSGO events. I'm not sure if it was CSGO, if it was a, it was Madden. It was a Madden tournament that happened. It was a Madden LAN sort of
yeah,
event.
Yeah, but that wasn't just a threat. Like that actually happened.
No. That's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, Kami, you're not being dramatic by actually mentioning those things. Because, and it, obviously, this is obviously very much relevant or specific to America. It is a real concern. And I think it's something that esports events in terms of really need to start taking seriously, because we don't want to wait for something to happen where a guy comes in and shoots a bunch of people and a lot of people die before we take it seriously. So you're not at all being dramatic. Not at all.
Yeah, for sure. And I like Prophecy was mentioning, obviously, in our aforementioned scrapped episode, that you were saying that people like Thorin as well have like death threats and stuff going on to them all the time, because they sort of antagonist characters. That's the part they play in the show, and then some people just take it the wrong way. They don't understand what the analyst is doing just to make the show good, and they want to personally take that like as an attack, and they want to go fuck this guy up or something. And that should never happen, right? And I think Red Eye was saying this like for good reason. If you in a stadium with thousands and thousands of fans, which what esports events are these days, I think a certain level of security needs to be there, because it doesn't take 6,000 fans to do something bad. It just takes one fucking guy, right? And obviously, you don't want to fearmonger off one guy, but I think basic things like safety around the stage, safety around your panel, safety around the backroom staff, like that shit's important, man.
Yeah, it's super important, because I mean, like we said the other day, is that imagine something like you. I mean, let's just say that like the guy doesn't even want to hurt anybody, right? And what happens is he gets onto the stage, he runs up to his favorite player, he falls and he stumbles and he falls on top of the player and breaks his arm. You know, something similar happened at the European Champions Cup between Liverpool and Chelsea, where some random streaker runs onto the field, trips and falls onto Adrian and like hurts his ankle, which means that Liverpool already on their second string goalkeeper in Adrian, now he can't play. Now all of a sudden you have to go and get like a third string goalkeeper to try and help you out. Now, but like, I mean, that's in soccer. You can still recover vaguely in football, you know? Like arm in any sort of esport, that's pretty much 6 months of your career. That could be your career right there in a simple mistake. Now, like, it just shouldn't be possible. Like, fan events should be kept, you know, like, or fans should be kept separate from the players while those events are on. Sure, you'll have your signing sessions and all the rest, but you know, there's a lot less danger in that aspect than just random people being able to run out of the crowd onto the stage and like go and like hug their fans or whatever, you know, hug the players.
Yeah. No, and you're so right, and it's a conversation that always comes up, because there's this like, you know, we obviously look at esports, we kind of look in a lot of ways sort of traditional sports to see sort of, you know, what the norms are and sort of figure those out. And but one of the beauties of esports is that as fans, as a community, you're always so close to esports players, right? That level of access has always been so great, right? You get those Reddit AMAs that happen. I mean, even on Twitter, I mean, you'll see pro players actually like sort of screenshot a funny joke on Reddit and, you know, put it up. You look at sort of the videos when they do the sort of behind the scenes episodes of the different teams. And again, you'll see players, I mean, just literally scrolling through Reddit. So we have so much access to these players, and it kind of gets taken for granted in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, sports are sports, right? And so, you know, people will be nasty if you're not part of their team, and you know, that comes with the territory. But it's terrifying that, you know, we have so much access to these players, and my biggest worry, and I think a lot of people are starting to sort of bring that up, is this idea that we're not taking those kind of threats seriously, right? Because, and especially because to the point is in gaming culture, it's so much of the norm. Like, I mean, I've written articles in the past where I've had someone literally just tweet me and go like, I want to kill you. And I'm like, I didn't even say anything controversial. Like, I literally just went, oh, hey, here's my opinion. It's like really non-life-threatening, serious thing. I was just like, oh, I just think this is like a bad culture, you know, a bad reference of, you know, gaming culture. And someone literally just wanted to, like, tweet him, like, I want to kill you. And I'm kind of just like, you know, and we brush that off. But my biggest fear is that, like, we brush off because it happens so much and it's so much a part of gaming culture, which is not a great thing. But the day that it turns into something where someone, you know, and we've seen it, right?
That's what we said. That's what we said. You only need one nutter.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe that's
for
got
like,
right?
And then, like, how do you, you can't go back at that point.
Yeah.
There is no take back. It's done.
the guy that got swatted, where there was an argument that happened, I think it was in a Call of Duty game or something silly. And it was nothing at all serious. It wasn't even like they didn't even know each other. There was no relationship prior to that specific game mode. And it wasn't even an esports thing. I mean, not that it would have made it better, but there was nothing at stake. It was just playing with random people. And these two guys got in an argument, started insulting each other. And the guy, did a swat. And for people that don't understand that, swatting means you'll call in America, obviously, specifically, you will call the police and say, or call 911 and say, there's a guy with a gun in a specific house. You get the address. You say that this guy's armed. He's hurting people. They obviously will bring the SWAT team. And obviously, we also know the history and the culture around sort of American police. And so the guy got killed. A young guy got killed because someone got upset in a game and swatted him, and the guy died. And that's gaming. I mean, that's ridiculous. So there's really that precedent that's been set. So now we're going to get to this level. It's terrifying. Really, it is.
Yeah, it's quite a depressing topic, but I like really hope something does get, like action does get taken in future events. I don't know how lax the rest of the security was at the major, but like two incidents at one tournament, too much for me. I'd rather not have to see this thing, not have to talk about this thing. But yeah, that's just how it goes, right?
But DK spoke about it before. I mean, I think it was one of the tweets where he kind of mentioned, he said he mentioned some of the security concerns he had.
Yeah, but it was a different event. It wasn't this one. It was much earlier the IBET Power Masters. But that whole event was like a shambles. This is like a major.
So it wasn't a specific event. But I mean, he still, again, raised the concerns that he had going, bags aren't really checked properly. You kind of, and I mean, even for me, actually, when I went to Rush this year, security kind of actually, I had my bag with me. Obviously, I was part of media, so I had my media pass, had my bag with me, obviously I had my camera in. The guys literally were just like, actually, you can't bring your bag in until you get your media pass collected up front. So I actually had to leave my bag in my car, had to go get my media pass, come back down, and then bring my bag and go up. And obviously, I was a bit annoyed in the sense of like, I had to go and do the trip twice. But that's, to me, I'm like, I'd rather they do that and make me walk twice as opposed to just walking in, and anyone can walk in without getting the bags checked properly, and we have a tragic incident. So yeah, gaming, I think esports specifically needs to really start to kind of look at it, and on a global level, just really look at security and start taking it seriously, because I don't want to do a podcast where you have to talk about a tragic incident that happened because security wasn't taken to that level it should be.
Right. So I think we've reached a fair consensus there on the point of safety and security. Just do it better events. Easier said than done, but it is something that's important. Think about it. Now talk about more lighthearted topics. The meme of the fucking podcast, in my opinion, is Chinese retirement, right? So last week, I believe it was last week, maybe the week before, just after TI, we had a podcast. It was the TI special, and he spoke about, poor Fade from VG Gaming, one of the best PAS 4 players in the world, retiring. Might be Chinese drama here, Chinese drama there. He's like, so sorry, he's going to retire. Literally 2 weeks. 2 week retirement. And he's back. Signed up with Team Aster. He's playing with Chuan, SCCC, XXS, Baboka, and Fade. So like, prophecy, the Chinese retirement thing, man.
I mean, look, from what I've heard, it's got a lot to do with the way the Chinese contracts are structured, is that like you can't actually talk to other teams. Like if you go and talk to a different team while you're still contracted to one, it's sort of, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like the mafia, but in some ways it is. Because if you as an IG player go and talk to an LGD player, and like LGD or IG and IG finds out, they basically just blackball you. And you get blacklisted, you can't join another team, and your career is pretty much just done. And, I mean, that's always the famous thing of why these players, they're like, oh, I'm going to retire, and then they're retired for 3 months because they're basically sitting out the contract. It's almost like just saying to saying to your current team, like, I'm not going to play for you guys anymore, but I'm not going to join another team and help them. So I will sit out my contract, and then once my contract is done, I will join that team. Type thing, and like, because contractual law says okay, that's sort of fine, that's basically how it's done. And unfortunately, it means that a lot of the Chinese players just take 3 months off while they sit and do nothing because they're not allowed to play for another team, and there's nothing else that anybody else can do. So it's a rough one, but you got to just wonder, like, when these fake retirements are going to end.
But I mean, look, having said that as well, I mean, like, that's not even anything new when it comes to actual, you know, sports, traditional sports as well. I mean, you get those stories all the time when you look at...
You'll just tell that, like, the thing is, like, especially with a lot of the big sports, is that you know when the contracts end. In esports, by and large, that you have no idea when the contract ends. So it's sort of just like, oh, he's retiring, and then when he's 3 months back, you're like, oh, that must have been when his contract expired.
No. So to your point, what you've said is actually a very, very insightful point, right? Where they're kind of gaming the system, and I mean, and there's definitely that aspect as well. And obviously, we all know esports contracts are, you know, semi okay at best. I mean, we obviously had the thing with Flannery. We talk about NIP, you know, an organization everyone really respected, who also kind of was screwing around with contracts and players. So we all know that esports contracts are always, you know, very touch and go. But the idea of, like, sort of players retiring and then coming back, it's nothing new. I mean, you look at Jordan, who kind of, you know, went to go play baseball. Michael Jordan, he went to go play baseball because that's how far he was, like, I'm done with b-ball.
That was so, like, there was a lot of, I think, like, extraneous circumstances that, like, made that
sure. I just think it's nothing exclusive. I don't think it's anything particularly interesting. It's part of sports. I mean, and especially when you look at esports, where everyone's really young, especially when you have one of those big losses. So I remember, like, you know, Reginald, who was the mid laner for TSM, and obviously the owner and founder as well. But when he was still playing mid laner, so he's kind of doing the whole player coach vibe. I mean, he, after a really disappointing Worlds, I mean, he just was like, cool, I'm retiring. He was like, I'm done. And he actually still came back. You look at Xpeke as well. So, like, there's that history of, you know, of players sort of, you know, being emotional in the moment of a loss, kind of going, oh, okay, actually, I'm gonna give up, I'm done, and then they come back. So, yeah, I mean, you know, sports and just that competitive nature, a lot of times people sort of doubt themselves, and especially when you're in the public stage, you know, you'll make really rash decisions, and, you know, you'd assume people kind of speak to you and kind of give you a different perspective, and then all of a sudden you're kind of like, actually, you know, maybe I'm not ready to give up just yet.
Yeah, it is how it goes. I guess in Dota especially, the Chinese retirement is like a big meme. But I'm happy to see Fade actually back in playing. Like, I think I thought there was a lot of drama going around when he announced that he's retiring, because there was rumors that he spoke to RNG while he was still in contract with VG, yeah, that sort of thing. So it's good to see that it didn't get blown up that bad, and it's all good still. But yeah, it's just something to laugh at, I think.
Yeah,
look, yeah.
So that is the problem with the Chinese scene, is that, like, because of, like, the power that the orgs have there, you can't really, like, there's no team hopping, you know, like, the way the NA scene works is, like, they sort of, they have a bad day and they join a new team, or, you know, like, that's how it used to be. Obviously, with the buyouts now, it makes it a lot tougher, but that is largely how the NA scene and just about all the esports at a stage worked, is that as soon as, like, a better team asked you to join, you just sort of, like, you know, got up and hopped off. And yeah, in the tier 2 scene, that's still rife in just about every esport. Obviously, Dota 2 doesn't really have a tier 2 scene at the moment. It's been largely nerfed by Valve. The problem is that the buyouts screw so many potential roster moves at the moment, and that's basically why. It's like, you know, if Fade leaves to go to RNG next week, and that costs RNG, you know, like, let's say if he leaves today, it costs them $1 million in their currency, right? If he sits out 2 weeks and joins, it costs them 300,000. It's just, you know, it's just ludicrous. That's how it works. I mean, we had the drama, obviously, in European soccer with Griezmann and Barcelona. Like, that's still going on. But It's unfortunately how it works, and until these, like, crazy prices on players goes down, we're just gonna have to deal with it, I guess.
Yeah, even on that point. Sorry, no, calm me. Go first.
Okay, I'll give esports a little credit. I don't think anything in esports in terms of, like, shade has happened, like, it's the same level of Barcelona's fucking transfers. The amount of shit that happens at Barcelona, Real Madrid, like, the top teams in terms of football transfers, is so shady, man. The Neymar transfer. I know this
I
is
would
not
disagree,
esports.
Though. I would disagree, because I think if you look at SK Gaming, and I'm specifically talking about Fallen, the guys, right? They were Luminosity. And then that whole scandal, I mean, everyone brushed it off because they're one of the best teams in the world. Or at that time, arguably the best CSGO team in the world, right? And I mean, when it happened that time, yeah. But so, I mean, you know, we obviously quick to sort of call out orgs that kind of, you know, create shitty contracts, and they do, right? But on the other hand, that's also one of those signs where, You know, Luminosity did everything right, right? They backed these players before anyone else did. These guys, you know, and then they had sort of Flush obviously help out to kind of get them to the major. And then Major was the minor qualifiers. I can't quite remember. You know, Flush helped them out.
It was to the minors, and then they qualified through the minors to the major.
Right. So Flush, again, sort of that stepping stone. But, I mean, Luminosity was there at the beginning, right? Before I even knew who these guys were. And then, you know, as they blew up and it's obviously started getting, you know, courting from a bunch of other orcs, they kind of threw Luminosity under the bus there, right? It's one of those things with esports.
Yeah,
it's such a young scene that you kind of, you have to look at both sides. I mean, we've had instances of, more often than not, it's always the org that kind of screws things up because they have a lot of the leverage and that kind of clout. But on the other side is, you know, players have also not sort of done a great, you know, a great task of sort of being responsible for that thing. So, yeah, it gets tricky at times.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, the most out there scandal in esports where I was like, how does this shit actually happen, was like the Verflatten thing with NIP. Like, NIP, like, you think of this brand, like, one of the biggest in esports by far, and the kind of shit that they've pulled over the years, it's mind-boggling, really. So let me not bag on real sports too much. What, did I just call esports fake sports? Oof.
Yeah, don't edit it out. Hey. I want to actually cut that clip out without any context and just say that Carmel is destroying esports.
So. All right, you know who isn't destroying esports? The company called Mogul in Australia and the Alliance Dota 2 team, right? So we've always complained, or I always complained on this podcast. I must have done it for like 5 podcasts in a row, that Valve does not give a fuck about Tier 2 Dota. Well, you know who do? It's this company called Mogul. Australian startup company that raised about $1.3 million apparently in the last year or so, and they've decided to start up a Tier 2 Dota League in partnership with the Alliance, the TI3 champions, and they will be running it in the C region and EU region. So it's going to be $100,000 prize pool in the two regions combined. Each winner of the regions guaranteed a minimum of $25,000. So it's going to be like a league for the Tier 2 and Tier 3 teams. And I think it's pretty damn awesome, right? I think this is something that Dota's lacked now more than ever at the moment. And there's been so many calls and asks for, like, just some support for the guys who are not winning TI, right? And it's finally come. And it's come from third party, so maybe not the greatest thing, but it's something. And I think it's really awesome to see.
But I mean, I don't really have a problem with it being a third party. Like, yeah, people are going to complain over it's third party can control it, but it's also just like Valve's clearly not doing anything to help out. So,
yeah.
I mean, what more do you want? Would you rather have nothing? Or would you rather have a third party who's willing to take the risk? If they make, you know, if they make it, people can whine all about it and say, oh, but, you know, like they're charging too much, or they're doing this. The fact is, if they hadn't done this, it wouldn't have been created. Because, I mean, I obviously haven't seen like all the changes to the DPC, but from what I've seen, it's been an overwhelmingly negative response to the developed changes to DPC now.
Yeah. I mean, but I think on the other hand, though, and I think coming from someone sort of outside of the Valve world, right, I think that the other issue, the reason why I would, obviously there's people just going, fuck this third party shit, whatever. But I think from one, the other aspect, though, is that Valve is so integral to making sure that things work well, right? I mean, the fact that they had to kind of step into the whole Dota debacle that happened with, you know, the point system in China, all those things. I think what people would fear is that because Valve hasn't got a stake in this thing, at any point in time, they can just come in and sort of, you know, switch it up. I could just switch it up because they just go, this didn't work the way I wanted to, so we just change it.
But at least there's something.
I understand that sort of fear and a bit of sort of skepticism, because Valve didn't approve it, which means that at any point in time, Valve can come in, and they've set that precedent already, but they can come in and just switch everything up.
So you are right in the sort of point where Valve would or could do something that kind of hampers your league in a way, but I don't think, like, Valve, especially in Dota 2 and much more so in the CSGO scene, they have a very fucking hands-off approach. They don't give a fuck. You can do whatever you want. It's always been an open circuit. Very recently, the DPC has changed that a bit. But where I think you are correct in saying that is that this is, like, my biggest issue I've seen at Valve, like, in most recent days, is that they've completely fucked over Midas mode, right? This is a Moonduck tournament that they announced months ago already. It was like backed by like Action Slacks and whatever. It's his tournament. I mean, they've had top teams like EG and stuff committing to this team. They were getting into it. They were making content together and shit. People have bought their tickets already. So it's well known that this thing is happening. And then Valve just come in and they're like, I'm going to give you the dick. Qualifiers are going to be on the same date you wanted to host your tournaments. Like, what? Because my issue with this, right, let me explain it, like, very explicitly to everybody listening, is that the Dota 2 circuit is still an open circuit, right? Yes, you have the DPC tournaments, but there's no penalty for hosting third-party events. You're going to get, okay, I'm going to call it support. Like, it's not support. It just Valve lets you do what you want with the tournament. You can do what you want, like host things like Midas World, like the Summit, etc. But then you can't, like, still claim to be, oh, we Valve, we hands off, we open circuit. And then when your people try to do third-party things, you literally give them the dick. This thing's been planned for months, and it's so sad to see. And I'm getting very emotional here, but, like, Midas Mode is, like, a proper community event, right? It's something different from the rest of the scene. And then you just come in and you're just like, yo, we're going to put a qualifier on this day. I think it's pretty ridiculous. And the support it's gotten... support it's gotten on the Reddit event, GK, has been like 8.2k upvotes, people petitioning to like, yo, man, can you just change the date so we can attend Midas Mode? We like it so much.
Yeah. But to your point, and I guess it always comes down to the style that different sort of, you know, devs will take towards the esports, right? So Riot Games has always been very sort of hands-on. Well, I say hands-on sounds very positive, but they've always been very controlling, right? They go, cool. You know, this is how we're going to run things. If you don't get our approval, you can't do anything with the game, right? So, like, you know, there's that side of it. But again, it's a double-edged sword, and that's how it comes down with Dota. Like, you know, with Valve, Valve's approach to things is kind of everyone does what they want, live your best life. But then you get the other side of it where you kind of give that much control. You get things like with ESL and the whole Facebook stream, right? Which was a huge backlash, and kind of Valve kind of had to just let it ride because money was spent, there was contracts signed, they had to kind of ride with it.
Valve didn't let it ride. Yeah, they came out within like a day and just announced like DCMA is not allowed. You can remove them or we will cancel your
Was with the Dota scene? Went on for like a while.
No, it went on for like 2 days.
For the DMCA thing, it was like the Facebook streaming was allowed. They got sold their rights, that was all good. But they ESL were not allowed to report other Dota streams.
I'm not specifically talking about the DMCA. Just the idea that like ESL kind of was like, cool, we're doing Facebook and going into that. To your point, I will concede on that point. They sort of Valve did step in, but it's always so tricky for Valve to do that, right? Because we've spoken about it in the past that they're so inconsistent about when they jump in, when they don't. They're always, I mean, their whole philosophy is if they can avoid it, they don't want to ever get involved, right? They kind of
kind of what you want. I mean, you want the scene to basically police itself, because whatever we say about devs and how these devs are nice and those devs are evil, it's like,
yeah,
devs are still devs. They're not like, they don't generally watch esports, they don't generally follow esports, they don't generally know how esports is run. So it's almost like getting a baker to do a plumber's job. Think about it, right? Every time Valve has gotten involved, like, by and large, it's not been to, you know, the absolute betterment of the scene. There's been a couple of times when it's worked out, but in general, they make things that are like, it's not, you know, an unmitigated success. There's always like a little bit of a negative in some respect. It's because they don't think like an esports person would. They think like a game dev or a businessman does. And that's perfect. Yeah. You know, it's like, that's what they studied to do. That's what their job is. Their job is not to be esports.
Yeah. But having said it, so the reason why I'm disagreeing is like with Valve, that may very well be true, right? Because again, the way that Valve approaches their games is very different. But the reason why, again, League of Legends really pushed the boundary for esports in terms of production value and how things worked was because they went and realized you need an entire department that just does esports, right?
And yet all of their decisions have rarely
no,
gone
their
over
business
well.
Decisions are fucked
like,
up.
Go look at how they're running Worlds right now. You have the third best Korean team, possibly one of the 10 best teams in the entire world, right? They have to go to the play-in bracket.
No, but
and then
Korea's
you've got
the
some
best.
Like
the Korea, no, got... but Korea's not the best region right now, though.
Yeah, but why would region strength have anything to do with how good an individual team is?
Because they changed the incentive for MSI, where if you win MSI,
because G2 won MSI, right? Mm-hmm. That means that Europe is stronger than Korea as a whole.
That's the whole incentive. That's the whole thing they did. And the reason they did it.
But that's ridiculous. Though. Why would that ever matter?
But look,
that's the exact problem. Is that that's the kind of decision made by a dev who's like, oh, like this, you know, because G2 won, that means Europe is stronger than Korea. It's like, no, it just means G2 might be the best team in the world.
Look, I know I get biased when we talk about League of Legends. Like, I get that. But I think the problem they were answering in terms of how they did that setup, right, was everyone going, international tournaments and League of Legends don't really mean anything, right? You get your Rift Worlds, Rift Rivals, sorry, which, you know, no one really gives a fuck about, because why should they? And teams also don't care. Fans don't care, except for bragging rights. So the issue then, and with MSI as well, in the past, it kind of went, it's just a bragging rights thing. So the reason that they did that whole setup was because the complaint from the community was there is no incentive for teams to take it seriously, which means when people sort of, when countries sort of, you know, nations go up against each other, there's no incentive to really give away everything. And so the answer to that was make it worthwhile. And that's why they kind of did the thing where going, if your region wins this, you get an incentive. Are they saying that Europe is the best region in the world? No, they're not.
They're acting like it, though, and that's the problem. No, that's not a decision that an esports person would make, and that's exactly my point.
I absolutely think it was. I think that decision that they did to make sure that there was an incentive to take MSI seriously, that created the competitive integrity that we've always called them out on.
But why does it benefit the whole region? If it had been like G2 gets to go to Worlds, they've booked their spot by winning MSI, perfectly fine. It gives everybody an incentive to try
their
hardest.
I guarantee you. If
but it's now like Europe gets a better spot than Korea. It's like,
yeah, it doesn't incentivize it for the teams, because the other teams in your region is your rivals also. But I think like the point of what both of you are trying to say, from what I understand here, is that Glenny is saying that he thinks that you can, like, for example, Overwatch League has like commissioners and stuff, people whose jobs is to have public relations and stuff in the esports, to do this, to do that. And then what Prophecy is saying is that you don't really want your devs to be doing that, because you actually want, if like Valve say they want the open market and stuff, you have like the ESLs and stuff managing themselves. It's a best of both worlds. Devs don't have to care then, because they can just focus on the games, and then the TCC runs itself. But then what you're saying, Glenn, is that you can also have people who do their jobs well. Not League of Legends, of course,
yeah,
but
look,
in general.
But based on the way you phrase it then, actually, I would agree with Prof in the sense that the game devs should not be running esports. So if we're talking about it from that point of view, I agree. I think it's too close to home. There's too many conflicts of interest. Like, that I get. And that's why I love CSGO so much in terms of an esport, is because there's a gap. There's all, you know, that distance between the game devs and, you know, the tournament organizers, sort of the format they choose, how they invite teams. That I agree with. To your point, Carmel, the beta, I was just saying that there are devs that understand that you can't be a game dev and then also run esports. And that's why, to the point, you know, Riot, and you look at, you know, sort of Blizzard as well, they have people whose entire job is to run eventing within the esports world. But I mean, yeah, to the point though, I think, yeah, game devs should have a bit of a breathing space between the game and the esports scene, because, you know, they can be conflict of interest, and, you know, to Prof's point, there can be bad decisions made every now and then. So for sure.
All right. My boys are in line. You see that?
Also, I just want to say, we've agreed too much tonight, so I just want to say fuck both of you, just so I can keep up that energy of just, you know, let's not all be too kind to each other.
At least I get to say that when somebody wins at TI, I know that without a doubt the best Dota team at that tournament has won. Whereas, like, if I look at the League of Legends, it's like, oh, because of some stupid decision on how these teams are seeded, some team
agree,
can get the get the fucking third best Korean team,
the
best Chinese team in their group, and it's just like, and you're fucked.
Glenn, no, I agree with you. I mean, TSM almost made it to, I mean, they were 2-0 against Clutch Gaming, right, and within League of Legends. And TSM was absolutely one of the worst teams to do it. But the fact that they got that far, well, they were the last team to play in the Gauntlet, is because they did so well in the Spring Split. So, no, Prof, to your point, absolutely, I do agree. Like, you know, there are times that the way that everything's structured, that there's a risk that the worst team will get up there. And that's why I love CSGO, because at any given point in time, it's the best of the best, and that point in time in the game are competing with each other, and that's a beautiful thing to do. But again, there's always pros and cons to the different formats, so
for
you've got to decide what you want to do.
For sure, and that's actually what Toby One made a big thread about today. Is like, yes, I know the community is upset and outraged about this and about that, but like, with every change, like, there's a perk and then there's also a price to pay. Like, you can't make 100 changes today. You have to make them slowly over time. Obviously, I think it's a bit of a cop-out for Valve, because when you say slowly over time in Valve term, it's like literally to the end of time. I mean, we're still fucking waiting for Half-Life 3. I'm just putting it out there. But yeah, it's just like, there's pros and cons to everything, right? But you know what only has pros and no cons? South African esports, baby.
That's a hot take right there.
Well, something that is really doing well at the moment in South African esports, I will start off, is that Fortnite South Africa is actually just having the time of their lives right now. Okay, I'm going to quote Hachi OG from Twitter, his tweet. This week they had EPS trio qualifiers on Wednesday, was a free-to-play tournament. Their finals was on Saturday for $750. ATK Arena hosted some scrims, $600. Winner takes all on Thursday. On Sunday, there was a 9,000 Rand tournament going on from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It was a pay-to-enter tournament, but still, like, so many things going on. That was Sunday. And in the nighttime on Sunday, they had a podcast going on. There's been multiple other tournaments going on as well in Fortnite. I think the scene right now in South Africa is thriving on so many ends. Like, the players have so many things to play for. I think the players themselves do a good job of marketing their game, being active on social media, engaging quite often. I think, as a whole, I'm a big fan of the scene. I think it's looking really good right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you want to see. It's sort of the grassroots building where they basically build themselves up from the ground. And it's exactly what you want because, you know, once you have that kind of support, it'll hang around for a lot longer than an artificially built scene like we have seen in some of the other games. So, yeah, very, very glad to see. And all power to the guys in Fortnite. We love to meme about that game being terrible, and it probably is. But at the end of the day, you can't knock the effort from the actual players.
Yeah,
look, sure. And I think adding on to that, I was chatting today with Kevin from Big Five. Big Five being the game studio, not the esports organization, which is, you know, very confusing sometimes. But so they did a prediction game with EVTech around the ECL. And I mean, the numbers they got there, like, I mean, I don't know if I'm in a position to say those numbers. I really don't want to say anything right now. And if they want to talk about it, they can. But the numbers they got there with in terms of the prediction gaming was the kind of numbers that if a stream got those numbers, we'd be talking about it being one of the most successful streams like in the country. So I look at it, and we've obviously spoken about esports before. And I mean, I've obviously been quite outspoken in terms of how I feel about the scene currently and overall, not just the specific games, but just overall, I felt like it's been lackluster. I feel like we've kind of burnt a lot of bridges in terms of how we've approached different brands. But I'm really excited about seeing what people are doing currently. Like, I think a lot of people have kind of realized, you know, we can't keep pretending like the scene is like this blowing up thing that, you know, we use numbers from overseas and pretend like South Africa is replicating that. We're not. But from what I'm really starting to see, and, you know, looking at the guys that have really been grinding away quietly but doing their thing really well, I'm starting to get really optimistic about sort of, you know, where the scene is going. And I think next year would be a really cool, it's going to be a good year for esports locally. Like, I genuinely feel that way. And then you look at sort of the ECL and so what's happening around there and how people are sort of working around those tournaments, it's great. Like, I'm genuinely actually quite excited about it.
Yeah, ECL was actually the next thing I wanted to bring up because, like you said, that app was such a creative thing, right? I think ECL have done a lot of good things in the space of time, and it's something that like, I really like to highlight, like the ESL, the hat streams challenge, I like to call it, where you meme act streams with the picture of him and you put a meme and his hat and this shit. And I think it's like, you create such genuine engagement then through the socials because you have this hashtags, there's prizes to win, you're getting exposure for the brands like EVTech, like Lenovo, you're getting people engaged, you have good memes going on. I think for me, that's so creative, right? I think their socials have been really good. Obviously, I will put a caveat there. When they initially announced, obviously the first announcement got like 100 likes and 100 retweets and shit. But after that, it was a fucking disaster. Opening day qualifiers, a bigger disaster. There was a lot of shit going on there that should have never happened for an event which afterwards ran so damn well. But like, once they got their shit together, it was such a good event. I mean, the first CSGO broadcast we had on TV in South Africa, massive. I think the production quality again was really good with the likes of like instant replays during the game, that sort of thing going on. I think Hazen Extremes did a really good job casting it. The teams in the end put up such good performances. Like, I think the league was more competitive than I thought it was going to be. I think, Prof, you can add more on this. And then the finals, man, how was it like, Prophecy?
Yeah, I mean, the finals were very, very well done. I mean, again, you were talking about them earlier, but Goliath kept adding to the pile of trophies they're collecting this year. And I mean, I had to come back from a pretty dire spot in the semi-final against, I think it was Energy. Was it Energy?
No, I think Energy was actually 2-0. They 2-0'd Energy.
No, it was Energy. They were up against Energy. And then, so like They had to come back from a pretty dire spot to beat Energy, but made it to the finals up against Sin 5, who'd knocked out Big 5. And it just got a... Like, to say that it was domination is a little bit of an understatement. They did kind of slam Sin 5 in the finals. So, I mean, GG clearly coming into to Rage and Comic-Con on the back of some real hot form, and they look to be the team to beat in South Africa. For the rest of the teams, Big 5 ended up coming fourth. Energy actually beat them out to take the third spot. So it's a bit of a surprise for Big 5. They'd look, you know, like, for the most part, at least the second best team in South Africa up until this point. But Sin 5, with the new addition of Mistum, is certainly a scary team. And, I mean, you know, roll on the lands, because it's going to be quite a spicy situation if ECL is anything to go by.
And you know what I loved about the whole thing as well is just like the kind of content that EVTech was putting out around all of this was just they put out like great graphics. I mean, simple graphics in terms of just, you know, saying this team won against this team, and just kind of, it's just the content that people are putting out. I feel like we're starting to get to that point where people are understanding, like, you've got to put out your content for people to actually engage with, right? Like, and then, I mean, sure, you know, you look at sort of, you know, ROIs of brands, sort of, you know, stream numbers. Yeah, maybe they're not great. I mean, I didn't really pay attention to the numbers, so I can't say for sure. So, I mean, but I'm just saying, for me, what I love is that people are understanding the power of marketing, right? And
yes.
In terms of really putting out your content, it's something we've mentioned about VS Gaming in the past quite often, is that they really didn't push out their own content, what they were doing. But now you're seeing that as well. They're also understanding, just put out a simple template and just put out the numbers, put out results, give people a chance to actually engage with you. And I think, out of everything that's going on right now, what I'm so excited to see is just like TOs and orgs and the players themselves are starting to understand the power of just a simple retweet just goes such a long way. Will the numbers back up that sort of that activity? We'll have to see, you know? But I'm just really excited to just see teams and all, you know, and players and TOs really just pay attention to marketing, because in the past it's been something that I felt we've done really badly. So
for sure.
I'm quite excited about that.
And like on that point, then I completely agree, and this is what like blew me away so much with ECR. Like they had those highlights videos, their socials were so good, and for me this should be the norm. I don't want to see like VS Gaming have a fucking 500 million rand tournament. I don't give a fuck about that. If I can't see it on Twitter, if I can't find the streams, that's a problem. And I think even VS Gaming got a little better at that. Like during all the DGCs they had this year, the FIFA one, I think by the first or second one, when they got to the FIFA later on in the year, they started doing Instagram posts and stuff. And that stuff went viral, or not viral, but like in terms of socials and stuff on Instagram, they had great reception to that kind of stuff. So people are starting to get more creative now and getting new avenues to sort of get public eye on their content, and that's really cool. I think that needs to happen a lot more. Like, it's not just about the stream, people. It's like a lot more to go with it. I think that one last thing I will add about ECL, though, I think their broadcast was phenomenal, right? But at the same time, I think, I don't know if I'm a big fan of the panel host, and then your panel is the same people who are casting the games. Obviously, there was one casting pair, Extremes and Haze, who casted the whole time. I don't know if I really like when the break is going on, you had the same people who are talking about the game for like 2 or 3 hours when the game is going on, analyzing the game and stuff after. It doesn't, in terms of like a show, that doesn't make too much sense to me. And I also think, like, as a cast, I don't want to sound like a super diva here, but I think you do want to have a little bit of a break then in between to have your best performance for the next game. Probably,
yeah,
do you have anything to add on that?
Like, you're right. And I think, look, we've said now, we've come a bit of a way already in terms of starting to kind of do better production and really paying attention to those things. But I mean, to your point, that's one of those, you know, there's one of sort of the gaps we need to fill, is going, let's not have the same people and the same faces. And this is kind of still one of the things that bothers me. Like, you'll have someone who's a, you know, prolific in one game, right? A specific genre of esports, who then is just gets put into everything else. You know, and it bothers me, because there's so much talent out there that we need to foster. We really need to grow those talents and create a sustainable format. I don't want to see the same four faces. And I'm going to say it now, and again, obviously everyone's going to go, oh, you're doing hot take. No, I don't want to see the same four white faces in every single esports, right? Because I think we've come a long way in terms of gaming in South Africa. I mean, there's still a long way to go, but there's diversity there, right? I mean, and so far as you see the same sort of white faces, you know, it's all talking to each other and doing the same thing, we can do more, right? I think we can really just look a little further than sort of the comfort zones that, you know, esports is kind of used to here locally.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of agree on that point. Like on the terms of like having more diversity in terms of broadcast talent. I think Ikasi TechFest was a good example of that. I can't remember the lady's name, but the lady who hosted that event was like a hit. Like, people loved it. She just did such a good job as like a host, an MC, the amount of energy she brought. So to see new faces come in is good. And of course, we are living in Africa. Some diversity. It's not a hot take. This is just some fucking facts at the moment, right? But I think on the ECL side, I think the issue wasn't that. I think it's comes down to budget constraints, and that's usually the thing it comes down to talent in South Africa, to be perfectly honest. It's like, you can pay two casters to do the job of two casters to panel, to host the thing, to do this, they're casting, they're doing panel, that kind of stuff. I mean, Nate is a big guy in Game Time Media. He's doing a lot of things. He's not just the host, he's hosting, he's doing a good job there, but like, there's so many, everybody's doing double job basically. And I think it's like something as a necessity in the scene at the moment, but I also think like, when everything else in ECL looks so good, I think maybe copping up a couple of thousand more bucks to have other people sit on the panel after the game might be worth it. Maybe you have to make your casters take a budget, a salary cut. Sorry, Extremes, don't fucking hate me, but it might be necessary, you know? That's just my take on it. Prophecy, where do you stand on terms of broadcast point of view?
I mean, it depends on what... Budgets are going to decide just about everything, it must be set. So, you know, like, it's very nice to have as many... pieces, you know, members of talent working for you as possible, but like, when it comes to that, it's like, especially with the broadcast, you want people that you can trust, you want people that you know are going to do a good job in that respect. So going with the two guys that did, Xtremes and Hayes, have obviously they have worked together before, they've worked on a broadcast before, so that they know the, you know, the gig. It's not something you have to like teach them, and they don't need to learn about cues and all the rest. So I think they just played it safe there. They got the two guys that they knew could do the job, could do both jobs of panelist and caster, and they went with that. So, I mean, you know, you can say that you want more diversity, but unfortunately, apart from somebody like Lighters and Snare, we don't really have many non-white people in the scene. I mean, obviously, as well, Camille, I mustn't, you know, forget about you, but the thing is, it's like it's just unfortunately, because esports requires in South Africa you know, middle income family to help you get there. It's just not an easy situation for many of the non-white families to do so, and it's like societal pressures that, you know, white people have.
I totally get you on that, and I mean, yeah, it's definitely not an attack. I mean, I obviously understand that you got to get people, the right people for, you know, the right event. So totally hear you on that, like 100%.
Yeah, and I think ECL did do a good job of it. I think Xtremes, like you said, Xtremes and Hayes are very versatile talent. People are going to say, so biased, Xtremes is on your podcast, wada. All right, fuck it. Screw Xtremes. You are shite. Not really. I'm just saying that to calm you guys down. But I mean, Hayes, obviously phenomenal at all. Whatever job he does in terms of the microphone is just like, it's actually just so good. But yeah, I think that's the thing. I still though. No matter how I don't, from my perspective on that, I know we broadcast people going on about this a bit too long, but I think no matter how good the casting pay is, I don't think they should be doing double job like that. That's just my take on it. I think if you're running a stream at home and you're being like analyst grant, play-by-play grant, monster drinking grant, that's fine. But if you working at a broadcast as good as ECL, I think it's worth it to have. Even if you're just calling in guests, like the teams that got knocked out, like, I don't know. I think you can make the show a bit spicier in terms of broadcast aspect. But yeah, that's where we stand in ECL. Great tournament. Yes, of the TOs, get your social media games on point. Obviously, a lot of people already doing creative things out there. But man, this is the kind of stuff. I think this needs to be the norm. Content is where it's at, boys. You see all the streamers putting their Twitch affiliates, following their footsteps, Kappa. But yeah, I think that is our show for tonight. We've spoken for a decent amount of time, but a decent amount of topics. Anything, last words you want to add, Mr. Glenn or Prophecy?
Look, I mean, just I will say, like, I've always obviously been kind of the first to get annoyed at the scene locally, but I kind of feel like we're heading in the right direction. I genuinely do mean that. I'm not even just saying it. I genuinely feel like there's a lot of exciting things coming up. And I've been speaking to a lot of brands as well about they really want to jump in. And I think we're going to end the year strong. And I think next year, I just want us to build on everything we've learned from this year and just I want next year to just, we want to hit the lights out, you know? I really want us to just do the best we can possibly do and just do some fucking rad shit.
I'm going to cue Glenn on the podcast next year. I just roll around. He'll be like, I'm not mad anymore. I'm just disappointed. But yeah, that's our show. That was episode number 59. Sorry for coming out a day late. We got extremely unlucky. Our backup recording and our normal recording got corrupted on TeamSpeak. There's not much we can do about that. That's just how it goes. But this was episode number 59. The next episode will be episode number 60 on the 19th of September. And all right, don't forget to catch us on Twitter. All of us hosts at KChickDay, at G_KAYY, at STGutterLily. Prophecy, you can say your own one because I always fuck it up when I try to spell it.
At Prophecy Gaming, and Prophecy is spelled PROFECI.
Easy. And then if we have to spell gaming for you, then you have other problems in life, bro. And then, of course, you can find the publication at Esports Central ZA on Facebook, on Twitter at esportscentrl, and of course at the World Wide Web, esportscentral.co.za. We can catch all the latest and greatest SA esports news. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and goodbye.
Cheers.
Cheers.